That time, your lunch hour. Mr. Credit here. Are you ready for your daily dose of smart? It's coming. Now, if you're watching the breaking news right now, Ben Bernanke, he's saying a number of things, but essentially the Fed is not going to stop what they're doing. Things aren't good enough yet. Markets are up. They're going to continue to buy mortgage-backed securities that should suppress mortgage rates or continue to suppress mortgage rates, but we'll dive into the details of that. We've got our mortgage guru in the studio today, John Gerotes, with Guaranteed Rate, Vice President of Mortgage Lending, and top 1% in the country. What's up, Jay?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Nice Wednesday. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You look fantastic. One of my favorite jackets there.
Yeah, so wearing it just for you.
Bob. Yeah, okay. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Also, we've got a repeat offender, multi-time guest on the show today, Jason Lopez, in the studio. Jason, what's going on, my friend?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me back. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, great to have you in here. Jason's a real estate expert, has worked for a number of companies that you know of in the past. We're going to see what's going on with him these days. It's been a while since we've caught up. Apparently, things are happening in the real estate market that most people don't know about. Things are happening with investors. They're changing their philosophies about what they're doing, inventory levels, what's the truth behind that. And technology has changed things as well. So looking forward to getting into that conversation. Also, my financial planner, Dan Osgood from freeinvestmentaudit.com. Dan, what do you say, my friend?
Happy hump day.
There you go. And I tell you, I really appreciate your time yesterday helping me work out the life plan stuff with Jared. We're going to really create a simple, easy-to-use document, a checklist, so to speak, on how to get your life in order with regards to your finances, trusts, wills, the whole shebang. We're going to put that all together, make it easy to see and understand in checklist format, and you're putting a lot of work behind the scenes, so I wanted to thank you.
Oh, no problem. That's part of what I'm here for.
Yeah, exactly. I appreciate that. So, and speaking of, you know, the Fed announcement today, the market's up a little bit today. Dow Jones up 80 points-ish. It's kind of been fluctuating between up 60 and up 80. So not a huge day, up 63 right now. S&P's up 10. Not a huge upside day. I think the market's mostly expected this. But if that were the case, it would make you to wonder why we were down the past couple of days. And, you know, is this really a rally that can sustain itself? What will happen in the remainder of the trading day today? I have a feeling the market's going to come in a little bit. That's how it's acting. We will see. But this story that came out, Mbah Pisani broke this story out on CNBC.com, was really shocking, just alarming to me, looking at the actual numbers that exist. And, you know, calling it a retirement crisis, I think, is an understatement. I mean, these numbers are unbelievable, Dan. You've got people, you know, 66% of people have money saved for retirement. What about the rest of them? You know, 57% report having less than $25,000. We're talking about boomers here in retirement savings. I mean, you know, this is a serious problem. People expecting Social Security to be a retirement plan, it's not going to happen. You know, the idea behind Social Security, remember when it was created, there were pensions and, you know, everybody had a retirement plan through their job. This stuff is going away. Even big companies like IBM, as this report and this study shows, have stopped providing pensions to new employees. So those people who are getting hired now, there's no pension.
Pension's pretty much been replaced with the 401k. It's taken a number of years, but that's where everyone's gone.
Yeah, so we've got a crisis. And by the way, this study came from the Employee Benefit Research Institute, and it published its annual Retirement Confidence Survey. Retirement confidence, which confirms that what virtually all of these surveys do. Number one, Americans are living longer. Number two, they don't have anywhere near enough saved for retirement. So we have to look, and what I want to try to brainstorm right now with this great panel that we've got today is, what are some of the best moves to make? You know, especially if it's late in the game. You invest early, which we always encourage, because time on your side is very, very important. The mathematics of how money works, it's drastically to your advantage to start now versus later. But what happens when that clock starts to be working against you? You know, what if you're in your late 50s, early 60s, or even late 60s, early 70s, and you've got to come up with a plan for how to house yourself and how to essentially live in a time in which you won't be able to work anymore? So what do we do about that? So, you know, Dan, just to off the top of your head, what's the first thing that you start to think of when someone says, okay, I'm a late saver? You know, what are some of the things that you can do in that circumstance or advantages that are out there for someone like that?
We've talked about this a time or two. The catch-up provisions with retirement plans, IRA accounts, 401ks, you're allowed to put a greater amount once you reach 50. And you have to take advantage of those opportunities, because that's going to be your nest egg as probably a first line.
Okay, so look at the catch-up provisions, mm-hmm. number one. What about coming up with a number? I mean, the bad news is time is not working for you on your side anymore. But the good news is you don't have to save as much money in that situation, you know, because there's not as much time left. So,
people are living a lot longer.
They are. But, I mean, hopefully, I mean, if you're starting to save at 70, you don't have as much to save for if you're still working. You know what I mean? So there are some positives in there. I'm just trying to find the bright side a little bit. So you've got catch-up provisions. The biggest thing is really housing. That's the most expensive aspect.
Mortgages are typically the biggest expense someone has when they're facing retirement. So if they can have their house paid off, or in a real manageable number, then that plays a significant role in their ability to be comfortably retired.
Yeah, and owning a home is really it's the cornerstone. I mean, it is the breakfast of your financial life. It is the thing that will allow you to be okay if everything else fails. If your investments all go to zero and the world goes to hell in a handbasket, if you've got a home that you own, you're going to be okay. You're going to be all right. That Social Security won't make your house payment, but it'll probably pay for your taxes. If you save a little each month, you could probably pay your taxes on your house and be all right. But how late's too late? I mean, JJ, this is something that, I know a lot of the people that you work with are very well off, and they're buying nice homes here in San Diego. But for people who are buying that are 50, 60, even 70 years old, how does the mortgage strategy conversation go with those type of people versus the people who are first-time buyers and in their 30s?
Well, it really depends. I mean, it depends what they're doing. If they're still working, let's say, they might not be living in this house for that long. So a strategy would be to try to get the payment as low as possible, maybe taking advantage of an interest-only type of product to keep that payment as low as possible, mm-hmm. to drive as much money to those IRA accounts and other retirement sort of funds that they can take advantage of right now to prepare for the downsize maybe. In 10 years.
So you think that for most people are thinking that it's better to allocate funds towards the catch-up retirement provisions than to apply toward the principal in the home?
Well, in this case, I mean, in this example, you're not planning on staying in that home and living in that home. You're going to be selling, downsizing, living somewhere else, maybe moving to Florida, taking advantage of the sunshine, you know?
Well, you don't like the San Diego sunshine, JJ, all of a sudden?
I'm just saying, it's a cheaper opportunity to live, or Arizona, where you can go and buy a $150,000 house right now.
A mansion.
Not so much anymore, but
I know.
So the flip side to that would be, I am going to stay in the house that I'm buying, or maybe I'm in the house, and what do I do now? I have a mortgage. Well, pay that mortgage off as fast as possible. So let's take a look at your financial situation today. Can you go into a 10-year fixed product to get that house paid off in 10 years or sooner? Then your home is paid for. Now you have a retirement strategy. If you need it down the road, you could always do a reverse mortgage if you needed the cash.
If they're still around,
That's true. If they're still around, could go by the wayside. But at least, right now that option is potentially there for the future. So you could have that sort of strategy down the road if you need it. But it's always nice to, be 70 years old, 60 years old, 65 years old, and live in a home that's paid for, right? So all you have is your taxes, your insurance, any HOAs or things like that you might have.
So when you talk about, creating a plan, financial plan and a mortgage strategy, it makes so much sense to be able to own that home or set yourself up to have your home paid off while you're still working, still in your prime earning years, and you can start using those catch-up provisions to just pile on your retirement account. I mean, you get yourself into a situation where you got your home paid off at 55 or 60 years old, and you've got another 10 or 15 years of working and making really good money before you're completely done. You can just pile in the money. And you got a paid-off house and a stack in your retirement account, a little Social Security probably coming, hopefully. You're going to be in really good shape. So this is why it's important to have a mortgage strategy. You hear me say the words, maybe you don't realize what I mean by that. This is what I mean. Strategize when your mortgage is paid off so that you can take advantage of it and maximize your finances. Lopez, how late is too late for someone looking to enter the real estate market? Now, you're a guy who's been in the real estate business for a very long time. You know a lot about it. There's a lot going on. How late's too late?
Well, I think in this market, Derek, it's the opportunities are there no matter, you know, where you are. I mean, kind of piggybacking on what JJ said there, you know, if they've got some equity, maybe they've, you know, been saving pretty well. They may look at pulling some money out, maybe buying an investment property to help finance their retirement a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, prices are still down. If they can find the right property that generates a good enough income on a monthly basis, a little bit of cash flow coming in, offset some of that living expenses that they might be incurring. But, you know, it depends on the situation too. Are they ready to downsize? You know, is it an opportunity to sell something, move into something that's smaller, more manageable, maybe a condo or a retirement community in Arizona? It just really depends. But I think real estate historically has been a pretty good, solid bet in the long term. And just because of your age, I don't think that's, you know, necessarily the deciding factor. It's about your lifestyle, what you're looking to accomplish, and how it's going to benefit you, especially in that retirement stage.
So what you're saying, you know, I'm just imagining someone 55 years old. We're going to buy a house. We've got a little bit of a down payment saved up, but we're getting a 30-year loan. You know, I mean, the average age expectancy for males right now is 85 years old. For females, it's 87 years old. So you pay off your mortgage, you know, on your deathbed, essentially, if you're the average person. Or, you know, what are the ways that you strategize that? Do you expect to hold for 10 or 15 years? I feel like if you can hold for 10 or 15 years by real estate right now, you can't lose. And in that case, maybe if you have a little equity, then you could sell it and take that equity and buy a home in Phoenix or something like that.
Right. And the other factor would be, you know, maintenance issues and what type of energy you've got to put into owning a particular type of property. I've heard you talk as an example about tenant in common investment opportunities where there's no maintenance, there's no energy expended. You just collect your check every month. Right. So looking at something that might be easier to take care of as you get older would be something to definitely consider as part of that strategy.
Yeah. Dan, are you getting into risky territory as a 50-something who's buying a house and getting a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage? Is that something that creates additional risk that people don't realize?
Not necessarily, because no. It just depends on the situation, why you're doing that, why you're creating that 30-year loan. Maybe you're going to make that extra payment and pay it off 10 years earlier. Mm-hmm. But it just is part of that strategy. Maybe it's a cash flow issue where you can handle that payment for 30 years, but if you were to do, say, a 15, it would be too much of a chunk every month. So not necessarily. It definitely is adding some risk, but it may not be a bad thing.
Okay. So it's obviously going to depend on a specific situation, mm-hmm. but in general, we can't say that that's necessarily a bad thing. And it's always a tricky thing to try to determine your allocations there. You know,
right.
How much money should I put towards paying down the house? How much money should I put towards the investment vehicles? And JJ's initial example, that strategy of putting money towards the investment side has really been the smartest thing to do over the course of the last 6 or 7 years, because your equity is going to earn you 0%. You know that. And it's not going to earn you any money. It's just sitting there, and your house is going to go up or down in value regardless of what you owe on it. But if you can go and you can get some type of return, we got 16% last year in the S&P. You can go and you can get some type of return on your investment, on your money. You can grow yourself to what we call a freedom point quicker, which is the amount of money that you have versus the mortgage that you're carrying on your property. You get to a freedom point quicker where you could pay your house off. You don't have to. Your money's still earning you more than what you're paying in interest on your home. It doesn't make any sense to pay off the mortgage. And that's why there are some people out there who say, listen, you should always have a mortgage, especially when rates are low. Why in the world would you, you know, want to pay down a loan that you can get for a small rate when you could earn drastically more than that in a compounding fashion in your investments? So is it too late to get into real estate? I don't think so. I just think it requires having the right conversation with the right people, and that's exactly what we're here for. Call the helpline. Here it is, 888-888-0154. If you're trying to make a real estate decision, we'll break down the numbers, show you exactly what the smartest thing would be for you and your family. 888-888-0154 is the number. That's 888-888-0154. When we come back, something that so many more millionaires are using with their investments to grow their wealth. What is it and why? When we come back, we'll make you smarter than everyone else. Stick around.
If you'd like to speak with Mr. Credit, just visit talktomrcredit.com. That's talktomrcredit.com.
If you are considering a short sale or letting your home go to foreclosure, please listen carefully. There are laws in place to protect you and ways that you can get out of a bad real estate situation completely unharmed in almost every single case. But here's the important thing. Time is of the essence. I will help you 100% free on how to handle a short sale or foreclosure on your home while eliminating the damage done to your wallet. But I need you to call as soon as possible so we have all potential options available to you. Okay, this is the key. Call 888-888-0154. It's 888-888-0154 and just leave a message with your contact info and brief synopsis of the situation. That's it. It won't cost you a dime, but could save you a bundle. I don't want you to become one of those horror stories I hear about every day from people who didn't call me until it was too late. I'm doing it for free because it's my job. Let me do my job. Call 888-888-0154 right now for all the information you need to do what's best for you and your family with regard to your real estate. 888-888-0154. That's 888-888-0154.
The law is on your side. That's right. The laws are designed to protect consumers from being riddled with debt. They're designed that way so that you can become debt-free and get a fresh start. You should do what I did when I had financial stress. I called William McDonald with the McDonald Legal Group. Find out how you can use the law to your advantage. Delete your debt and keep your stuff. You got credit card debt, timeshares, old IRS debt, collections, medical bills. Any of this stuff can be wiped away with the Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and it only takes 100 days. Call William McDonald today. 800-997-1235. 800-997-1235. Or go online. SanDiegoBankruptcy.us. 800-997-1235.
This is Lisa with the McDonald Legal Group. We are a debt relief agency. We help people file for bankruptcy relief under the bankruptcy code.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, over 90 million people in the U.S. own mutual funds. Now, I wonder how many of those people have read all the fine print associated with those investments. The good news is, you don't have to figure it out on your own. Let me introduce you to Dan Osgood. Dan is a certified financial planner and actually a friend. Through his website, freeinvestmentaudit.com, he will do a free risk and cost analysis for any investment portfolio you have. This free analysis will find all the hidden fees and uncover the missing money from your investments. Most people don't think they're paying any fees at all, but trust me, you definitely are. The question is, how much in fees are you paying for the investments you have? If you have a retirement account or a bond portfolio of any kind, go to freeinvestmentaudit.com right now and get your free analysis. You deserve to know what your investments are really costing you. Freeinvestmentaudit.com. That's freeinvestmentaudit.com or text the word audit to 844-44. If you haven't sent your message in to register for the $500 cash giveaway, April 15th, tax day, the day the government reaches their hands into your pocket and takes your money out of it, I'm going to try to put some back. $500 cash we've allocated for this. All you have to do to enter is text the word radio to 844-44. So just put in the message radio. Send it to the number 844-44, and you will automatically be entered to win $500 cash on tax day. That'd make tax day a little bit better, wouldn't it? Yeah. Tax day would just get a tiny bit better if you know you won $500 cash. So, Dan, this story, so many more millionaires doing something. Whenever you see a trend like that, you always have to pay attention.
Yes.
You have to pay attention to people who are paying other people to figure stuff out for them, people who have teams of attorneys, people who are being very careful and who are good with money, clearly, what are they doing? So what we found out here is that more millionaires, a rise of 200% in the past 6 months, are using ETFs. So explain what the ETFs are and which ones they're using and why.
It's exchange-traded funds. They're just a non-actively traded mutual fund, basically, that carry very, very low expense ratios for as far as management expenses, because there's no active trading going on within that ETF. There's no reason to be incurring costs, which happen in your normal open-ended mutual funds.
Okay, so what you're saying is that in a normal mutual fund, they're buying and selling stocks every day, trying to make money in the short term.
Right. Or it may not be every day, but they're regularly reallocating, buying opportunities, selling gains and losses.
Which means they're also putting definitely time and energy and money into research to
right.
do all that.
Correct.
So how the ETF, they don't trade as much or at all.
It's pretty minimal. Usually it tracks like an index. Like, for example, an S&P 500, they just buy whatever stocks are in the S&P 500, and that's what you have. And it trades just like a stock.
Okay. So the benefit to that is that the lower cost to operate gives you a lower expense ratio, which means they take less of your invested money.
Correct. And it's usually very small. Like an S&P 500, you might be able to get for 5 basis points. So 0.05%.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's almost nothing.
Right.
I mean, in a world where we pulled those mutual funds up last week and they're averaging like
over 2%.
Now that's compounding. That's taking money away from you that could be compounding over time.
Right.
Ends up being tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars. So these ETFs, so millionaires are going to the ETFs. What do you think that means? Does it mean that they don't believe that people can pick stocks anymore? Or do you think it's just, hey, listen, the market's making 16%. Why do we need to try to do any better than that?
Maybe a little bit of both, because it's pretty well been proven, the efficient market theory, that over time, a stock picker is not going to beat the markets every year. And over time, it's going to average out to be about the same as whatever market he's trading in, typically. So if that's the case, why not just buy the lowest cost alternative to play that particular market?
Yeah, the last couple of years, a bunch of hedge funds have been getting shut down. They've been performing just terribly.
It's perfect evidence.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's where this money is coming from. You know, people who have had money in hedge funds where they're losing money and the market's up 16%, and they're going, hey, guys, this isn't going to work anymore.
Or even if they're not losing money, but they're doing exactly the same as the S&P 500, why not pay 0.05%? And just forget about it and not have to worry. You're not getting any real value from paying that hedge fund manager a big percent.
Yeah. How many people – now, you do the free investment audits for listeners of this program, and I really appreciate that. It's an amazing thing. It's something that you really can't get anywhere, and it's 100% free, where you go in and you show people, all right, here's what you own. Here's what you actually own. So I know you think you own XYZ mutual fund, but here's what they actually own, and here's how much it's costing you, and here's what the risk is for this type of investment. It's really cool. So you get all three of those things through freeinvestmentaudit.com. How many people that you see have caught on to this ETF thing, or how many people are in mutual funds? Just a guess off the top of your head.
More people are in mutual funds. I am seeing ETFs showing up more and more, but it's a small percent.
Now, they cost less. Is there a greater risk to them for any reason?
The only real risk would be is if you were to buy one that's in a very thinly traded market, then there might not be a big market if you tried to sell it. You might not be able to get out real easily. But they're creating new ones almost on a daily basis, so that market is growing very quickly, so that's becoming less of an issue.
Yeah, and I want to speak specifically about the ETFs we're talking about. Listen, if you haven't gotten your free investment audit yet, you've got to do it. This is one of the best uses of your time. It takes you a very little amount of invested time on your part. Dan will do all the hard work to show you exactly what's going on with your portfolio. Peel back the curtain, show you the costs, what you actually own, and what the risks are. These are things you need to know. And if you don't know off the top of your head, you must know. You must know. freeinvestmentaudit.com is the website, or you can just text the word audit to 84444. So you just send a text message with the word audit to 84444. Now, some of these ETFs that have given kind of ETFs a bad name, you know, these ones, the triple ultra, you know,
high
crazy
leverage.
The triple long S&P, or the ultra Dow Jones, you know, where it's like three times, and these types of things, and they're short over here, and this triple gold this and all that stuff. Those are the ones that get people in trouble, and I think that is why, you know, for a long period of time, people have looked at ETFs like, oh, that's a scary place to be.
Yeah, those are a little bit gimmicky. On the surface, you would think, wow, if there's something three times the up, that means last year I'd have been up 45-50% if I was just in the S&P 500. It doesn't work that way because of the mechanisms. It is meant to be a day trading vehicle. You can't buy it and expect that you're going to get exactly three times whatever you're investing in over any period of time, maybe a day or two, but that's it. Because if you have just one down day, that just blows it up.
It comes back to the mathematics again, and the way that math works and percentages work when things lose value and then gain value again. You gave a great example last week. I want you to give it again. Ask us the question. It's an A or B answer, and it seems obvious, but go ahead and do it.
Okay. If I could give you guys, if you invested today and I could give you two choices of a return, one is 4% average per year for the next 3 years, or one is 33% for the next 3 years. Which one are you going to take?
I would definitely take the 33%.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it seems like a no-brainer.
That's what everyone says. And then the reason that's bad is because of the law of averages, how it works out. The 4% will say you earn 3% the first year, 4% the second year, 5% the third year. So that's 4%. The other investment is you earned 100% the first year. You lost 98 or 99% the second year. Third year, you earned 100% again. So using round numbers, if you started with $100,000, you're at about $113,000, $114,000 in the first investment. The second investment, you're at about $8,000. But you averaged 33% a year. So your money was cut down by, what, 94%?
92%. 92%. So you lost 92%, guys. How does that feel?
Darn it.
It doesn't feel good.
It's nice because I really didn't lose it.
Yeah, you did. See, and that's the point of the exercise is that you now that you understand the math, and they use this, the mutual fund companies, they use this math to trick you. Mm-hmm. So they show you in the little thing where you're doing your mutual fund search, it looks real pretty, and here's the average return. It's all green. It looks like everything's going up every year. But when you actually go back and look at it, you actually have to do the math yourself because they don't do the real math for you, unfortunately. But Dan does do that for you, and that's part of what's cool about looking and getting into the free investment audit. So you can go to freeinvestmentaudit.com or text the word audit to 844-44. Dan, you said something to me yesterday when we were working on the life plan. I wanted to bring it up today because you said that financial planning is as much about, or maybe even more so, about insurance than it is investing. Explain what you meant by that.
Probably I meant more it's about risk management, and insurance is generally a tool that you use to push that risk off on someone else, your personal risk. The example we talked about the most was, say someone has a net worth of $5 million and they have an umbrella policy on their house for $1 million. That means if their son or daughter is driving and gets in an accident, and they realize that you're the insurer or insured person, and you have a net worth of $5 million, they're going to sue you for that $5 million. Your umbrella is going to step up and pay $1 million, but now you're on the hook to write a check for $4 million if you lose. And so that's just offloading that to an insurance company. Let them take on that risk. Let them handle that. So if that catastrophic event takes place, you have the peace of mind knowing that it's taken care of. It's not coming out of your pocket.
And so it's more about risk aversion. And
absolutely.
That's a great, you know, because we've been talking about that for a long time. Hey, it's great when the market's high flying. Let's go back and learn from the past. Okay, it was recent enough. We should remember when the market is taking off, that's when we need to hunker down and take a look at our risk, manage it, mitigate it as much as possible, you know, become diversified, look at your investments again, check on the risk of the investments that you're in. And this is just another way to do that, to protect your portfolio. That's when you know someone really knows what they're doing when we're talking about investing, and they're talking to you about what is your risk and how do we protect what you've got. You know, and I think that's why, you know, people who are good financial planners and like yourself, Dan, you see Jim Cramer on here, we're going to make money, we're going to make money today, we're going to make money today. You pump people up to make money. It's more about protecting your money. Listen, the time will take care of making the money for you. Let's make sure you don't lose a whole bunch of it. And the mathematical example we just gave is perfect just for that. Listen, if you haven't done this yet, do it today. Go to freeinvestmentaudit.com or text the word audit to 844-44. If you truly want to be smarter than everyone else, you've got to know what you own. It's your retirement account. It's too important. And to think that someone else is looking at it every single day for you, listen, no one cares more about your money and your retirement than you do, so you've got to know what you own. freeinvestmentaudit.com or text the word audit to 844-44. When we come back, what is happening in the local real estate market? And are there still opportunities for people out there to buy homes, or are the investors just gobbling up everything? We'll be back to tell you the truth and make you smarter than everyone else. Stick around.
If you'd like to speak with Mr. Credit, just visit talktomrcredit.com. That's talktomrcredit.com.
According to the Government Accountability Office, over 70% of people have errors on their credit report. And let me tell you, these errors are not helping your credit score. They are hurting it. Hi, Mr. Credit here. Look, the fact is, credit repair can work, but it's just too expensive for most people to be able to afford it. That's why I'm excited to tell you about a nonprofit company that has a flat fee credit repair system for only $4.99 per person. If you or anyone you know wants to improve their credit, just call the Credit Repair Helpline and speak with an expert for free today. 800-525-1349. That's 1-800-525-1349. Don't let the banksters and credit bureaus win the battle of destroying your credit so they can make a profit. Fight back today. Call 1-800-525-1349. That's 1-800-525-1349.
At Hanes, we know you hate annoying things. That's why we got rid of tags on all our t-shirts and underwear. Now we have some things in the sports world we'd like to get rid of. They include television timeouts in basketball, bad calls, all of them. When every basketball season ends. Did I mention bad calls? Being blocked on the Jumbotron by the person with big hair in front of you. Tags are annoying, so we got rid of them. And now we have our sights on annoying sports things. Hanes, go tagless.
As an Orkin man, I'm not a fan of cockroaches. So I didn't feel too bad when our scientists at the Orkin lab gave me a way to alter their reproductive organs. Hard to get a date like that. They won't have any impact on you or your family, but they're strong enough to chop down any roach family tree. My treatments may change depending on the house and the problem, but the results won't. Orkin. Pest control down to a science. Visit OrkinMan.com for guaranteed pest control.
Have you been selected for an audit by the IRS? Do you owe the IRS money and want to find a way to settle your account as quickly and easily as possible? Hi, Mr. Credit here. Listen, I had the IRS come knocking on my door over $600, which I didn't even owe them as it turns out. I know how scary this stuff can be. The good news is I know exactly what to do. My tax attorney, Jeffrey Kahn, is board certified and works only on tax-related issues. He understands how the IRS works and how to make the most of each situation. And get this, mention Mr. Credit when you call and get a free consultation and a tax resolution plan, $500 value, absolutely free. Call Jeffrey Kahn today at 866-494-6829. That's 866-494-6829 today and get these tax issues behind you as quickly as possible. 866-494-6829. That's 866-494-6829.
This is John Feinstein, and this is a CBS Sports Minute. Mark Sanchez, Tim Tebow, David Garrard. Rex Ryan insists any of the three could be his starting quarterback on opening day in September. If that turns out to be the case, Ryan better have his resume polished and ready to go by the time the season ends. Sanchez was awful last year and got very little help, but he was still awful. Trading for Tebow has worked about as well for the Jets as Ryan's decision to make Santonio Holmes a team captain worked out 2 years ago. Somehow, Tebow's still on the roster, the Jets holding out the laughable notion that someone will trade for him. Only the Jets are that foolish. And Garrard? He was never very good as a starter in Jacksonville, and he hasn't played for 2 years. Who will the Jets bring in next? Ken O'Brien? Why not go all the way and bring back Joe Namath? At least he'd be interesting to talk to. I'm John Feinstein.
Jay Farner here from Quicken Loans. We get a lot of tweets from folks that sound just like this. Jay, I bought my home in 2007. Since then, it's gone down in value. Now I owe more on my mortgage than my home is worth. Can I refinance? The answer may very well be yes. Recently, the government announced changes that may allow folks to refinance even if their home has lost value. For example, if you owe $300,000 on your mortgage, but your home's only worth $150,000, Quicken Loans may still be able to help you. Or if your current mortgage rate is higher than 3.99%, you've got to give us a call today at 800-QUICKEN. And for 3 years in a row now, J.D. Power & Associates has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. So if your current mortgage is higher than 3.99%, or if you owe more than your home is worth, call Quicken Loans today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com.
For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Important terms and conditions apply. Calls for cost information. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Mr. Credit does not recommend Quicken Loans or any other online company where you go and you talk to some who knows Yahoo and who knows where America. If you need a mortgage, you contact John Girotes here in San Diego. He's a San Diego guy. He's not, top 1% in the country, and he'll work with you personally. So there's absolutely no reason to call anyone else. The number, 888-888-0154. Leave a message if you want to look at your mortgage strategy or considering refinancing. This is a guy who will actually run the numbers for you and tell you what's going to be best for you and your family so you can make a decision that's educated. You can also text the letters JJ to 84444. So I think we've made that clear now, right?
Thank you.
That's just a little clarification for you. So Jason Lopez, what's going on, man?
Just enjoying the conversation.
Yeah, we're having fun in here today. What's happened since the last time we've had you on the show? I know you're doing some big things. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, we had an opportunity to work on the investment side a little bit. Had some folks who were buying a lot of property at auction, so kind of got to dive into that pretty deep. Have an opportunity here building a new company in San Diego. But you know, still, you can contact me directly for all the details and all the good stuff you need to know about.
So, can you tell us about the new company, or is it not there yet?
Yeah, we're still working on some details on it, but It's a national company that has a pretty good solid presence, works a lot on the distressed property side, and has some pretty interesting things going on.
What's happening in the distressed market? I mean, I've had in the past week almost a dozen incidences where someone has told me they're being foreclosed upon. A lot of them have thrown the word IndyMac out there. So whoever owns IndyMac paper is just deciding to unload it now. So a lot of people seem like they're getting foreclosed on, but other folks are saying, you know, the short sale market is – yeah, it almost dried up. It's going to be gone soon.
Well, I don't know about that. I think, you know, we had more short sales last year than REO sales. I think that's going to probably continue this year. I think the banks and the lending institutions have been getting more aggressive on the short sale side, where they're more willing to work with consumers, and they've kind of streamlined some processes and try to get through that a little quicker. I think we did have a little spike last month notice of trustee sales and things like that, but it's so competitive on that level. The properties that make it through the auction process, in other words, that don't sell at the courthouse, that end up coming back on the market as a bank-owned property, are much fewer, and that pool's kind of dried up. So I think the investors who are buying at the courthouse at these auctions, you got these auction companies coming into the game now, or have been now for the last year and a half, 2 years, they're spending a lot more money. I had a conversation recently with a friend of mine who is an auction buyer, and he was telling me, you know, there was a guy with the big hedge fund down there, had $6-7 million in cashier's checks and was buying everything. So people were overpaying. In a few cases, he said he paid more for properties than if he would have bought them, he could have sold them for on the flip. So the strategy is changing, right? Buy and hold, rental market strong. They've got an opportunity to generate some income in the meantime and put a tenant in there. Often they may keep the old homeowner who lost the property to foreclosure in the property as the new tenant. So you've got some interesting things going on there.
So the dynamic for investors has changed then from, you know, we're going to buy this house, flip it, make money, move on, to we're going to buy this property, rent it out, and take a cash flow position.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, I think it's kind of squeezing out maybe the, you know, the mom-and-pop investors a little bit. And it's really been created by the lack of inventory, right? You've just got this huge pent-up demand for buyers to get into properties and really nothing to sell them. You know, I have agents that work with me every day, you know. I could bring us 10 transactions tomorrow, but we don't have the property. So what's happened is folks have lost their homes or short sold them or whatever. You know, if you're a family of four, you're not going to move into an apartment. You're going to do everything you can to stay in a single family home in the same school district. You don't want to uproot your kids. And the only way to do that normally is by renting another home in that area. So investors have caught on, and now they're moving more down that path. The other factor is if you can buy it, you know, not only at a good price, but you don't have to put a lot of work into it if that homeowner was still living there. It's not like it used to be where they're going to tear everything out on the way out the door and the copper pipes and all that. In many cases, investors are working with those homeowners to convert them into tenants. So they're getting properties that aren't necessarily in bad shape, and you don't have the work of finding a tenant. You've got somebody kind of built in.
Well, that's definitely a change in what it has been in the past. But I mean, if they're just coming in there with $6-7 million and just buying everything, I mean, that certainly doesn't hurt the marketplace, right, for the average buyer, does it?
Well, I mean, it could if it's not coming back on the market, right? We still have the inventory problem. But, you know, it's a strategy that's working. And if an investor feels like they don't have the pressure of having to get that property back on the market in 30 days or 40 days and trying to sell it after they've done the rehab work, they can generate some income in the meantime. And they're also going to have equity build up probably over the next several years that is going to be a big benefit to them down the road.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a win-win.
Well, we got an email from a listener named Sharon this morning who has been at it for a year, trying to buy a home in Bonita. It's been a year. That's the type of story that I'm hearing on a regular basis from home buyers out there is that, hey, you know, it's taking some time, a lot of time in some cases, 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, a year. I hear those numbers all the time, JJ. But you can still, if you have the patience, if you have the perseverance, you can still get into a property. So even with, you know, these investors going out there with unlimited funds and purchasing everything they can see, people are still buying homes though, right?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it's definitely a challenge. And the ones that go in strong with their offer are the ones that are going to succeed. And, you know, that's VA, FHA, first-time buyer, conventional with low down payments. I mean, you just have to be really strong with your offer and know that you need to play ball. I mean, you know, if you're going to play against the investors, play ball. I mean, make your offer. Take the stuff, the fluff out of the offer. Don't ask for much. Don't ask for termite clear. I mean, if you're doing a VA deal, then you have to get termite. But I've seen a lot of escrows open in the last 30 days. And
are people removing contingencies to get deals through?
Yeah, the biggest contingency right now that I see is removing appraisal contingencies. So you're putting an offer in at, say, $400,000. That's what you want to buy the house at. Typically, there's a 17-day appraisal contingency where if you're taking out financing or if you're not taking out financing, you have the opportunity to get the appraisal, make sure that it appraises for the value that you're paying for. The sellers are removing that out of the contract to say, hey, you know what? You want it for $400,000. If it appraises at $375,000, you're still in contract. You're still buying it. You can't get out of the contract for that particular reason, which, you know, can be a sticky dynamic. If you don't have the cash to make it up, you're potentially going to put yourself in a weird situation.
It's risky, but you might have other ways out, though.
Oh, there's always other ways out. I mean, the reason why I think this started was because you had buyers kind of going in high with offers, like, you know what, let's just put it to the top. You know, it's worth 400. Let's go in at 450, and you know we'll get it appraised and we'll renegotiate the contract after the appraisal comes in. Well, sellers don't want to play that game, so they're not going to play that game. You want to come in at 450? Remove the appraisal contingency. So I'm seeing that a lot right now.
Jason, it would be more worrisome to me if these investors you're talking about weren't just at the courthouse steps, but if they were out competing with not just mom and pop investors, but you know, the typical family buying homes. Are we starting to see that take place? Is it going to morph into that eventually?
I don't know if it's going to happen on a big level. I think, you know, the investors are still looking for a deal, right? Yeah. And if it's, we're starting to see, even with short sales, but more traditional equity sales that are happening, you know, they're not going to necessarily get a deal there. But, you know, to kind of piggyback on what JJ said about the appraisal contingency, I had a conversation recently with my father-in-law, actually, who's in the business, who had a buyer who came in a little bit overpriced. But the appraisal came in. It wasn't a huge difference, but agreed in their offer, not after the fact, but in their offer to to pay the difference in the appraised value versus what they had offered, if that was the case. So you're seeing more proactive strategies from buyers, you know, less asking for less in terms of repairs and termite work and things like that. But on the investment front, those guys want to come in, get the best deal possible, and either get that thing back on the market or get somebody in there that's going to offset their expense.
Makes sense. I still have one more question for you on that when we come back. And is it stupid to pay more than what the home appraises for to buy a house in San Diego County? I mean, is that an idiotic thing to do? We'll shoot you straight when we come back. Stick around.
If you'd like to speak with Mr. Credit, just visit talktomrcredit.com. That's talktomrcredit.com.
If you are considering a short sale or letting your home go to foreclosure, please listen carefully. There are laws in place to protect you and ways that you can get out of a bad real estate situation completely unharmed in almost every single case. But here's the important thing. Time is of the essence. I will help you 100% free on how to handle a short sale or foreclosure on your home while eliminating the damage done to your wallet. But I need you to call as soon as possible so we have all potential options available to you. Okay, this is the key. Call 888-888-0154. It's 888-888-0154, and just leave a message with your contact info and brief synopsis of the situation. That's it. It won't cost you a dime, but could save you a bundle. I don't want you to become one of those horror stories I hear about every day from people who didn't call me until it was too late. I'm doing it for free because it's my job. Let me do my job. Call 888-888-0154 right now for all the information you need to do what's best for you and your family with regard to your real estate. 888-888-0154. That's 888-888-0154.
And now, another great hit from Flo. Discounts from Progressive are good.
Why is a strike bad in baseball if it's good in bowling? And then someone told me about a basketball strike. That sounds bad, but I'm not quite sure. But I think we all can agree it's good to get discounts from Progressive.
Progressive offers lots of discounts to help you save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states.
You guys need anything else right now?
I don't know. NCAA March Madness at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, and every game imaginable. I mean, what else could we want? Except...
Way to stay longer.
Yeah, right?
Oh, have you seen our remote? I can put the tournament in slow motion mode for you guys.
How's your wings?
Even better in slow motion.
Head to the official hangout of March Madness. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Hello, my name is Gary John, and I'm president of Corporate Alliance here in San Diego. Question, do you have a relationship system to help you grow your business? Now, if every opportunity has its root in a relationship, and almost all successful executives believe that to be true, it stands to reason that a smart business leader has a strategy to create these relationships. Corporate Alliance gives you that strategy. Now, whether you're a business owner, corporate executive, or other type of business leader, our relationship building products and services can dramatically improve your business success. Corporate Alliance has developed world-class training, software, and events that all work together to significantly improve the quality and speed of the relationship building process. The results achieved by companies that fully engage in the Corporate Alliance solution are often staggering. Email me at gary@knoweveryone.com to attend one of our events for free. That's gary@knoweveryone.com.
Para resultados y más información acerca de este programa, consultar la página espnradio1700.com.
BlackBerry stock, that's the reason Apple's down.
BlackBerry's up.
BlackBerry's up, baby. It's on the move. The next big thing, CrackBerry's coming back. Jason, what you told me earlier about the investors who are going and buying real estate at the auction steps, they have all this money and they're paying over, you know, what the flipped price would have been and all that stuff. You're pretty confident that demand isn't going to bleed over into the, you know, ready-made resale market?
Only if they can still get a deal, you know, and everybody has their own version of what a deal is. But, I mean, to go out and compete in, you know, the quote-unquote traditional market as an investor, you know, the numbers have to crunch. And in most cases, they're just not going to. Not to say it couldn't happen, but, you know, they're looking for that deal, and that's typically going to be in the distressed market.
That's always been my kind of my fear with those circumstances is that you get to a certain point in time. I mean, imagine there's enough money out there for, you know, these big hedge funds and Wall Street funds to go out and buy entire neighborhoods up, you know, and then completely control what happens in those neighborhoods with regard to rent prices and all that stuff. That's always been kind of a back of the mind fear for me when I've heard about these big funds coming in and just buying everything up because they can sort of make their own market. I mean, it doesn't matter what price they're paying if they own it all. It's a monopoly at that point. So that's always been kind of my fear. I mean, I'm glad to hear that you feel like there's a layer of security there. But for the mom and pops and for the regular person out there who's just buying a home that's not an investor, you know, does it make sense to overpay for properties now since home prices have gone up a lot in the last couple of years? I mean, is that a silly thing to do? Are people going to kick themselves for that, JJ, do you think?
I just think you have to set a limit to what you're willing to pay over maybe an appraised value, right? So maybe even and the problem is even appraisals can't really determine the market value today, always. And that's the problem, right? So appraisers, they have to work with back data, and they can't really just, you know, put it forward into 6 months. So maybe an appraisal comes in 10% low, but that's only because they're working on sales from the last 3 months. They're not forward thinking. I mean, they have to include maybe properties that are in escrow or properties that are listed. But maybe from a paper standpoint, you're really not overpaying. You just have to have the comfort zone to know that, you know what, I really want this house. And I'm okay to overpay for it based on paper numbers right now. Now, I think there is a limitation to that. If you're paying, I mean, you know, I'm working with a buyer. They're signing loan documents today. And I feel like they are overpaying a little bit for the house. But they love the house. You know, they're going to be there for a long time. So in that case, hey, you know what? So be it.
If someone's willing to pay the price, then that is the market value.
That's the thing. So if somebody is out there that's willing to pay it, you're not overpaying it. I mean, that you're not overpaying for the house. So I'll give you an example of how, you know, the buyer's market is right now. I mean, this is a $900,000 listing in Carmel Valley. And our family was over to family friends in Carmel Valley, a cul-de-sac little area, and the houses are... they're attached by one wall. They're almost like condos, but 3,500 square feet, no driveways, no yards, you know, kind of condo living, 900 grand. And they had an open house on Saturday, and there were cars lined up out this cul-de-sac, like 20 deep, to see the property.
900,000.
900,000. Went in 50,000 over the asking price in less than 24 hours. So,
wow.
An example of how, you know, competitive
shotgun,
a certain area can be. And that's almost $1 million home. So think about a $250,000 place or a $400,000 place.
They don't, I mean, they're just, you can't get them.
Yeah.
You know?
You have to be aggressive. You have to be aggressive as a buyer right now.
Very aggressive. So I get where you're going with that. Can you imagine people did that with stocks though, Dan? If there was so much demand for Apple stock that people are coming and going, I know this is what it's listed at, but I'm going to pay up. That'd be so wild. But that's what's happening in the real estate market. Does it make you nervous at all, Dan?
A little bit. But there are cases where you make good sense out of it. JJ already did. Where if that's a house you're going to live in and you just love it, then it's worth it to you.
Yeah. No, I could see where people would think that it's worth it. It's an emotional process. There's no doubt about it. People thought it was worth it at the top of the market, too. I mean, that's why they were pulling the trigger. Mm-hmm. We don't have the same circumstances that we did at that time, and not even close. And people who are qualifying right now are qualified buyers. That's the good news. And majority of them have to have some pretty decent skin in the game, which is also a good thing. But if you're overpaying, if you're paying above list to get in, is that not a sign that we're back to the mania level and it's time to relax for a second, Jason?
Well, I think it is a good sign of that. We were just talking about that at the break, that, you know, you've got a lot of the same circumstances in the market, different situation, but the emotional aspect of what I referred to back in the day as kind of the Wild West. You know, you're buying over list price, you're removing appraisal contingencies. We've got a lot of that stuff happening. What we're not seeing yet is that spike in pricing. There has been a slower buildup of pricing, and could that break free? I mean, this spring and summer, we may see some of that.
You know, you think it's going to go up?
Maybe. I mean, we're hoping we'll get more inventory just as people are – the sellers are always a little bit later to catch up and realize that, you know, oh, my gosh, I've got – you know, my neighbor had an open house, and it was a $900,000 property, and there were cars lined up down the road. I'm maybe thinking about selling now, you know, or I've been on the fence, and now I'm ready to get off. So we'll see how it plays out through the spring and summer, and hopefully we'll get some of that inventory. But
that's a good point, though. Sellers might see that, because like that person right there who bought that house for $950,000 was listed for $900,000. The neighbor might go, wait a minute, you think we get $1 million? Maybe we get $1,050,000. You know, if there's really that much demand,
right?
Maybe we get $1,050,000.
And there is. I mean, it's, you know, JJ mentioned earlier about, you know, somebody trying to buy a property in Bonita for the last year. We're not talking about them out driving around on a Sunday looking at open houses and searching internet sites and tagging properties and emailing. They're actively writing offers, and they've probably written dozens of offers and have been beat out, and they've been in multiple offer situations. So the demand is definitely there.
Yeah, no question about it. And that here's where my feeling is on it. It does make me nervous when people are paying above, you know, what an appraised value is for a home. It should make you nervous. It makes me nervous. However, we're still significantly below where we've come from price-wise. People have to qualify. They have to have some skin in the game. And ultimately, when we talk about, you know, a plan, creating a retirement plan, a financial plan, a mortgage plan, and having a strategy for what you're doing, it really doesn't matter what you owe on the home. It really doesn't. If you can afford the payment and you've got a strategy to pay it off by a certain period of time that's going to put you in a position to retire, it doesn't ever matter from the day you buy your house until the day you die. It does not matter what it's worth. In fact, if the thing goes down, your mortgage payment's going to go down because the escrows will go down. That's the only thing. If that's your worst case scenario, that's not so bad. Then you just take that extra bit of money that you were paying towards the taxes go down, you pay that towards the principal, you pay the thing off early. And if that's your worst case scenario, you know, then so be it. But people who are getting in with the idea that, oh, we're going to sell in 5 years or we're going to flip it in 2 or 3 years, that is where the risk comes in, and I would not be willing to take that. But you go and you find the home that you want to live in for the rest of your life, you can buy it in any market. So when we say it's always a good time to buy real estate, it is if you have those conditions met. But if you're just getting in, or, you know, if you're settling for a house because it's the only one you could get into and those things like that, that's when you need to be careful, because if you are putting yourself in a position where you have to sell down the road, you are going to be subject to market conditions. And what those conditions will be, we don't know. But if you buy real estate the right way, you buy it for the long term, it does not matter what it's worth. The day after you buy it until the day you die, it does not matter. The worst case scenario is the thing goes down in value and your taxes go down. And that's it. So personally, I feel it's okay if you have the right mortgage strategy, JJ, which you're helping people do every day. Are people seeing that? Are people starting to understand that again, now that we've kind of got our financial minds right again? You know, people aren't being crazy and thinking money grows on trees, and we've seen more people saving money and stuff like that. There's more cash on the sidelines. Are people getting smarter about their mortgage strategy and understanding more what buying a home is all about?
Without a doubt. I think people have had enough family and friends lose their homes where they're educating themselves. And, you know, the exotic programs aren't really out there. So it's a lot easier, I think, for people to understand the products that they're getting into. And the majority of people are doing standard 30-year fixed loans. And that's what they want. That's what they're asking for. And I'm not concerned about the increasing value. I think it's, you know, we've waited for it. The mortgage products aren't there to support craziness to expand the market rapidly. And that's where we had the problem 10 years ago. That's what let it get out of control. It was the mortgage products that were available with no down. It was easy to get financing. You didn't have to prove anything. You just bought a house.
And we don't have that, so we've got a nice layer of protection with
definitely
that. I agree. Gosh, I wish we had more time to have this discussion. I could talk about this all day long with you guys. Really appreciate everyone being in here today. John Girodes, our mortgage guru, Jason Lopez, a real estate expert, and my financial planner, Dan Osgood from freeinvestmentaudit.com. Cyrus, great job today. Hey, that's it for Mr. Credit this week. It's March Madness starts tomorrow. Are you guys aware of that? We're broadcasting all the games right here on ESPN 1700, so save the station in your dial Thursday and Friday. It's going to be basketball the entire day and through the weekend as well. I'll be back again on Monday to make you smarter than everyone else. We will see you then. Brian Garrity, Big Daddy, coming up next.
If you'd like to speak with Mr. Credit, just visit talktomrcredit.com. That's talktomrcredit.com.